Hey, what's up, guys? Welcome to... Wow, we are absolutely honored today to have a very special guest in for this week's Fistful of Collars. None other than Rafael Lovato Jr. Rafael, welcome to the show. Thanks so much for coming in.
It's great to finally be here. Thanks for having me.
Man, pure luck that we managed to get you into the studio this week, because you just so happen to be in Austin. You're training... well, we all know you've got your MMA fight coming up soon, but tell us, why are you in Austin? What are you doing?
Well, I have a... a little partnership with Onnit. They've been sponsoring for some time, and I love to come down here and visit their facility. Get some solid training in. Their headquarters is just amazing. You know, they just expanded. Now they have like a martial arts facility on one side, and then the sports performance and the gym on the other side. And I can really like kind of get away, but still be in my sort of normal routine of conditioning, training, you know, grappling, Muay Thai, everything, sparring, and still have like recovery, good food, you know, all those things that that are essential to my routine.
Man, I mean, to be honest, it sounds like you're being spoiled down
there. I am. I'm definitely a bit spoiled here for sure. And then, of course, I have a lot of friends. It's great food. Austin's an amazing city. So
I did visit the Onnit facility a couple of years ago, and I mean, that place is like Disneyland, right?
Yeah.
They got all the toys, but tell us a little bit about what the training is that you're actually doing right now, because 9 weeks out, approximately, right, from your MMA fight in London in June against Gegard Mousasi, it's the title fight, Bellator middleweight title. What are you doing training-wise right now? Are you already in the camp or?
Oh yeah, I like to start camp about 10 weeks. Wow. Especially for a fight of this magnitude. Obviously I'm kind of in phase one, you know, which is picking things up, you know, getting the sparring going and everything. And this week, I mean, so far this week, let's see, Monday we had what I like to call scrappling. All right, like wall wrestling. With some grappling, you know, striking and mixed in with that. So we had some of that. I had a great session with Tim Kennedy and my good friend Andrew Craig from Onnit, who's just been amazing. He's really put together all of this for me. He's my guy at Onnit.
So he's kind of he's organized this whole kind of like training week for
you. Yeah, 100%. And he's a jiu-jitsu black belt. Ex-UFC fighter, and he's currently making his comeback to MMA. So he's getting ready for a fight too, so it just worked out perfectly. He's a 185er.
That's great. He's not the only big name you've been training with, right?
Tim Kennedy was also there on Monday, so very awesome to mix it up with him. That guy, so much experience, another very well-rounded fighter, great guy, you know, awesome energy. So we had fun. So we had that scrappling session on Monday. You know, I got 10 rounds in with them. And then later that day, I had a strength conditioning session with Primal Swolger, Eric Leja. Definitely look that guy up if you're not familiar. He's just like a kettlebell, mobility, all-around badass. He put me through a great session. Then they got the sauna there, everything, a little recovery. Tuesday... Let's see, what did I do Tuesday?
I mean, that's an incredible schedule. How do you mentally stay with it throughout all that work? That's amazing.
Just get used to it. I squeezed in a nap in between, a little nap. But, I mean, 2 to 3 sessions a day is pretty normal for me.
Wow.
In an MMA camp. There's just so much you have to do, you know. You know, obviously I balance it out well. Tuesday morning was light. Trying to remember exactly what I did. I know I did some Muay Thai and something else. And then Tuesday night was sparring. And then Wednesday, yesterday, was a recovery day. So I always put that kind of in the middle.
Probably need it after the sparring, right?
Yeah, 2 hard days for sure.
Yeah.
For me, you know, I kind of, over the years, I figured out that Wednesday's a good day to tone it down just a bit so I can... You know, balance the week kind of in halves. First couple days, next couple days,
And I guess, you know, just sort of no offense to bring this up, but you are 35 as well, right? So
I am.
and when I say you're 35, I mean that as in combat athlete years, that's a lot of miles on the clock. So I assume that, you know, with over 20, 25 years of training in various martial arts, you probably learned when to push and when to back off, right?
For sure. Most definitely. For me, I think that's part of the game, you know, just like you have to get better at your technique, you know, your strength conditioning, you know, all those training areas, your mental and everything, all that is also directly correlated to your routine, you know. And I think that's something that not everyone talks about, but just, you know, dialing in your routine. Even if I was in my 20s right now, I wish I could go back and do more recovery, you know, and think more about yoga, mobility, and stretching, and all those things, you know, because I definitely put myself through more than what I should have, even though I was young and I was able to push through it, you know, understanding that there are some days where I was just doing ridiculous stuff that really wasn't giving me any gains, you know what I mean? So over the years, obviously, you get smarter, and just dialing in my routine to what it is today, I feel like, you know, it's as professional and as, you know, spot on as what it could be. And that's one of the things I've learned, you know, like that Wednesday. Okay, Wednesday is a lighter day, because if I go hard 3 days in a row, something's more likely to happen. Thursday, you know, I'm not going to feel that strong. So
chances of getting hurt are going to be higher. That
exactly.
Kind of thing,
and just
right?
losing motivation, you know. The other part too is with dialing in that routine and everything that you have to, you know, plug into that, you got to make sure you stay happy. You know what I mean? Just stay happy, stay lively, energetic. And, you know, along with that, you find the happiness and the enjoyment in spending an hour and a half just stretching and doing mobility, or, you know, just focusing on a recovery day. And not putting in your mind like, this is a waste. I need to be killing myself. You know what I mean? This is actually making me as much better as if I was doing a training session. You know what I mean? It's mentally, you have to tell yourself, this is making me better. This is a part of it. It keeps me happy. It keeps me fresh. So I'm that much better for the next session, and I can get more out of that next session.
I was just going to say, sorry, Chase, that we're all masters eligible around this table, unfortunately, right?
I'm hitting master two this year.
Yeah, I'm there, and it's interesting, isn't it? That, you know, that's something that you tend to learn as you get older. But Chase, I remember when you interviewed Lovato a couple of months ago, you actually said that you learned a lot from that talk about the recovery, and you even started doing some of it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's related to what I was going to ask.
Yeah.
When people say stretching and like I like to stretch, I know I'm a 25-minute stretch person. Like, I'm just lazy. I don't particularly love it or anything. But you just
That's
said
still
you
stretch
for an hour and a half. I mean, is that what a normal session looks like for you?
Man, it's super easy for that to happen. Like, you know, I get the foam roller. I have different, like, balls, like lacrosse ball, tennis balls, things like that. And, you know, I kind of blend a little bit of the stretching, the foam rolling and everything into some mobility, some yoga. You know, I'm super blessed nowadays. I have a new teacher in my life. His name is Cameron Shane. He's very well known in the yoga mobility community for his creation of the Budokan movement arts. And actually, Ryan Smith Films, who's done several jiu-jitsu documentaries, did a documentary about me. He just released a new documentary about Cameron and his history in creating the Budokan movement.
So we can get to see what that kind of looks like.
Exactly. And inside that documentary, I'm actually in camp for my last fight at the end of last year. And so there's a lot of footage of me, you know, sparring and training, getting ready for that fight with like Shanji and one of Cameron's students who's a MMA fighter, Josh Berkman, famous ex-UFC fighter. Mm-hmm. And we were, you know, getting after it. But, you know, so my stretching sessions will easily turn into, like, some crawling, mobility, and flow, you know, that kind of stem from Cameron's Budokan training. Also, my strength conditioning coach, Luke Tyree, is also very, you know, in tune with that same flow, mobility, style, training. And so, like I said, it's super easy for a little stretch just to become, you know, an hour plus like that, whether it's a warm up, a cool down, or just all I'm doing. And then I like to plug in those specific sessions where that's all I do, you know. And yesterday I had a great, yeah, it was yesterday, my recovery day, Wednesday. I had a great mobility movement session with one of the trainers at Onnit, Francesca, who's, you know, really focused on that element, and they have her there. And so, you know, it was an hour of just nonstop movement, just body weight, you know, and one of those sessions that you go in, you're a little sore, a little beat up, a little tired, you know, I just sparred the night before, but at the end of it, you feel better. You know, the old me, like, you know, even in my 20s, you know, obviously early 20s, I would go like a month straight before I took a day off, you know. And it was always hard every day, you know, multiple times a day. But as I got later into my 20s, you know, I would take days off and things like that.
Did you have that mentality that if you weren't like lifting heavy or sparring hard or you know, doing some sprints,
wasn't
or
doing anything
intense,
man. Yeah.
my opponents were outworking me.
Right.
You know,
right.
That was my mindset, yeah. You know, for sure.
Because, and, you know, you've always been a very mobile big man. Right. And I think that anybody who's watched your jiu-jitsu, you know, you've always competed in the upper weight classes. But one of your best attributes has always been the fact that you've been very agile, very flexible and mm-hmm. able to move your body. Whereas up until a couple of years ago, the bigger men in jiu-jitsu, they were generally categorized by just being kind of big, heavy, strong, but not necessarily mm-hmm. mobile.
Yeah. Now, it was more unique to find the mobile big
right?
man, for sure.
We've seen a big shift in the last couple of years, though, right? I mean, like, we watch the heavyweights and up nowadays, and you see an ultra heavyweights doing amazing stuff, right? Do, mm-hmm. do you think that this is something that's maybe filtered down, a lot more people are aware of that kind of training?
Well, I think jiu-jitsu gives you more mobility, obviously. Mm. You know, it makes you more mobile. I think a lot of what's happening is the big guys nowadays, all of them started when they were young. You know, that's what happened with me, you know. Obviously, I'm a big guy now, but when I was doing jiu-jitsu, you know, I started 12, 13 years old. I'm a kid. You know, you're the smallest one in the room, and you're forced to play guard and, you know, learn how to be the small guy first, and then you grow into your body. And that's something I'm super thankful for, you know, because then you get to develop the full complete game, you know, before your size really kicks in.
And that's something you just kind of like try to carry with you, is like just remember what it was like to be the smaller guy.
Yeah. Well, it's always in me. You know, I prefer to be on top nowadays.
Oh,
I
yeah.
think as everyone gets older, that's kind of how it goes. But I still enjoy playing guard. And, you know, basically every round that I train, I always start by pulling guard first. You know, so...
it's like the classic
having
jiu-jitsu
fun
thing
with
as
it,
well, right?
You know what I mean? Like, you know, for me, I've always enjoyed the movement inside of martial arts, you know. That's why I don't like to get stuck doing too much of the same thing. You know, even earlier on, you know, I started cross-training in judo and wrestling. And, you know, growing up, I mean, under the influence of my father, we always trained everything. And the thing that I always gravitated to the most, the thing that made me excited to train and excited to compete, was feeling how my body would move. You know, like there would be, for instance, there could be a competition where I won, but there wasn't that much action. You know what I mean? Maybe the matches weren't that exciting, or, you know, it was just super even or whatever. Maybe I was able to be victorious, but I was just like, man, that just wasn't that much fun because we didn't move that much. Mm. And then there might be another tournament where I didn't win, you know, but I had some matches where there was a lot of action, a lot of things happened, and I could go back and have a lot more data to go back to training with and say, okay, here's what I need to get better at or whatever. And I just felt like there was more of an exchange. I love the exchange.
Do you also, you know, feel it was like a better representation of, you know, your jiu-jitsu, what you actually do with your body at that point?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, being able to express yourself through movement, you know, mm-hmm. that's martial arts. It just so happens that the movement has a a bit of violence to it, you know what I mean? But
and more so recently, as you've gone towards MMA, right, the last couple of years, because, you know, for you obviously cross-trained in your entire life, but you spent so much of your career as a professional athlete purely as a grappler, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it was relatively recently, you know, the last couple of years or more, that you started moving over to MMA, and you've not left grappling behind. Let's make sure that's very, very clear. Your, mm-hmm. you know, your ADCC invite came through. You're going to be competing later this year at the World Championships. You yes. know, back again for, I think it's your fourth ADCC?
Seventh.
Seventh. Oh, my God.
Where you been, Hal?
I know. So, all those years gone. But, I mean, hell, that is an incredible, you know, dedication to grappling. But then from there, to make that shift to MMA, the intensity is so different. The sport is so different. Let's talk a little bit about the mindset and about what you had to do to kind of make that switch from one realm to the other, because it's so different, right?
It is. I mean, obviously, much more intense, for sure. You know, I got a later start than what most would, you know, would probably do in my case. But I feel like everything happened the way it was supposed to, the perfect time. There was no part of me that, that, you know, had any regrets or thoughts of, like, should I have stayed in jiu-jitsu and could I have done more or should I have done more?
You'd done plenty at that point, so let's make that clear.
I had a bit, you know, just to give you guys a kind of the full spectrum. So, how it all really came about was at the end of 2014, I had a major injury. And that was right after I had just done my first MMA fight. You know, and for me, MMA was always in the plans. Like, I didn't know how much I would pursue it, but I knew that I had to do at least one fight to, you know, experience that and learn more about who I was as a martial artist, you know, and really tap into my whole life as a martial artist. You know, jiu-jitsu is really only one piece, you know, of my, you know, my martial arts life, right? And so I always knew I would do it. Well, I had my first fight, and then I got injured afterwards, tore my pec tendon, and some, you know, a major surgery, a major injury. It was the first surgery of my life, and here I am, 31 years old, just turned 31. And so coming back from that, I really had to put things in perspective. That was the first time that the pause button had been hit. You know, since I was 15 years old, every year was, you know, Pan Ams, Worlds, and every tournament in between. Pan Ams, Worlds, every tournament in between. Then the Europeans came around. Then it's Europeans, Pan Ams, Worlds. Then the Europeans, Pan Ams, Brasileiro, World. You know, like the whole season. That was every year of my life for more than half my life at that point. And I was really hung up on chasing that second gold medal at the World Championships, you know, as a black belt. That was something that, you know, BJ Penn inspired me. I was there. I watched him do it live. And I said, you know, I got to be the next American to do that. And, you know, that dream came true. And then it was like, okay, I have to win again. I have to win again. And I put way too much in my mind about, you know, that title, like having to define who I was. And
why the two times? You said it in many interviews that it was the second title or like the repeat that really almost haunted you, that was you obsessed over. How come?
I felt like the greats were the ones that, you know, got the gold multiple times, you know, and I didn't want to be a one-timer, you know. I wanted to establish myself as one of the best of my generation and also become the first
American to do two.
Non-Brazilian to do two. And so, you know, I had a lot of motivation to achieve that. Well, you know, years pass and I'm not getting there. And I could see once that pause button got hit, you know, I could see how much I felt like I was, you know, I was doing things because I felt like I had to, not always because I was super inspired to, you know. And I felt like I had to be at the Pan Ams because that was where you warmed up for the Worlds, blah, 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 blah. And I just kind of got stuck in that jiu-jitsu tournament grind season. And I forgot to just, you know, be appreciative of what I had managed to accomplish. And when that pause button got put on, you know, I had months and months of no training and really thinking about what I was going to do coming back, you know, and wondering if I was going to be able to come back to begin with, and, you know, how my body would be, and just what I was going to do, you know. And in that time frame, I got to, you know, finally sort of come at ease with what I had done in jiu-jitsu. Like, okay, I didn't get 2 gold medals, but I medaled 8 years in a row in 4 different weight classes, all 4 of the heavy weight classes, you know, and I won many other titles, becoming the first non-Brazilian to do several of those things.
Well, I mean, and let's just run through some of those quickly, you know. So obviously, world champion, 3-time no-gi world champion, 2-time pan champion, 2-time Brazilian national champion, European champion. I believe you were the first non-Brazilian to do the Grand Slam as well.
The first person to do the Grand Slam,
yeah. Is that right? Oh, wow, okay. So, I mean, that is a laundry list of achievements, right. and yet I still
didn't feel satisfied until that injury, and I just, you know what, it's okay, you know what I mean? It's okay, and I like I said, I could tell how comfortable I was with that same routine and how I was kind of losing that feeling of being hungry and inspired all the time. You know, I had my moments where I really was inspired in Brazil when I won the Absolute and different tournaments, different super fights and first Metamoris and things like that, where I was like, I was super inspired. But the consistent grind of the tournaments, I wasn't always inspired. You know, and I feel like my performance was affected by that.
The cycle, you get locked into that cycle, and sometimes it is difficult to look at the bigger picture.
Yes.
Right? And especially the frequency with which jiu-jitsu competitors have to compete, because there is really no off-season.
No.
Right? You know, you there's the gi season, and then there is the brief no-gi season, but there's no real break there where you can step back and look at
things. If you want to compete multiple times a month, it's easy.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, and even the big major tournaments now, especially with the international growth of jiu-jitsu, there are even more opportunities to compete. So guys are competing every month in major tournaments all over the world. So it's interesting you mentioned about how that injury kind of made you sort of step back and you know, kind of look at what you were doing. And obviously the new challenge was right there, so you decided to go the MMA route. But also the switch to MMA. Now, you didn't go in as a complete novice. Like a lot of people, athletes who have made the switch from jiu-jitsu to MMA, some have had success, others have not. The ones who have not have generally had to start from scratch at that point. They've made the decision to go to MMA, and it's been a very steep learning curve. Now, you were very lucky because your lifelong background as a martial artist, you kind of like, you're pretty much there, you know, from the get-go, right? So it was a case of getting that experience as a competitor. But tell me about the first couple of fights, just getting your feet wet in that different scenario. How was that for you?
Well, you're a white belt all over again, you know.
And were you, though? Were you really a white belt?
Oh, 100%.
Wow, 100%, okay.
100%. You know, and that's what I was inspired to do, get out of my comfort zone, feel that once again, you know, feel those unknowns, you know, and you know, like I said, discover who I am as a martial artist even more, put my whole life, you know, into one, you know. It definitely, especially the first couple fights, man, you're very stressed. You're definitely, there's fear, you know. And that fear doesn't really leave. You understand it more, you know, and you accept it more.
When you say that you were a white belt in MMA, you know, that
he doesn't
want
to believe you. He doesn't think you're
a
white
belt. I don't
believe
you. No, I refuse to believe it now. But you're talking about the white belt almost like in a symbolic sense of that kind of going in and knowing, you know, that you don't necessarily know everything and there's a lot to learn. But it sounds like we're not talking about skills here, because, you know, you were a very proficient martial artist in the various phases of combat, right? So it seems that what you're mentioning right there about the experience of fighting and the different stresses that you encounter in the MMA world, it seems that that was something completely new that you really had to learn to deal with.
For sure. And keep in mind, you know, I've never been in a real life altercation ever in my life. And so my first fight in the cage was my first fight ever in my life, you know. And so,
I punching somebody with real intent, having somebody come at you trying to take your head off, that intensity of a real life combat,
it was all new.
Wow.
It was all new. And you know,
that's
so
that's an intense situation, right?
Very intense. Like I said, you know, leading up to those first few fights, I mean, the 2 months of camp, I mean, I would it'd be hard to smile, you know what I mean? And I, you know, would get beat up. I still get beat up, for sure, but you get more used to it, and you understand that you know, you understand better that whatever happens in camp, you can't, like, in your training, you can't say that's, like, the exact representation of how you're going to perform. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to accept more that, that, you know, when you're sparring, you know, wall, Muay Thai, you know, MMA rounds, and you got fresh guys rotating on you, like, you're going to get hit, you're going to make mistakes, you know, you're going to, like I said, feel like a white belt again, you know, like, in jiu-jitsu, you know, obviously I got my butt kicked plenty of times by my sensei, Salo and Shanji Hibero. But I got to a level where, you know, I didn't feel that all the time, and I was too comfortable, you know.
Maybe not getting pushed like you would.
Exactly. Mm. You know, I mean, you get the skills, you have the experience, and, you know, it's rare that you make mistakes to where you get submitted, or maybe your guard doesn't get passed that often, or things like that. And there I was, just feeling like I was getting beat up over and over again, you know.
It's probably been a while. You know, there's a very short list of people in the world who can take you out of your comfort zone in jiu-jitsu, right? So
yes.
It's probably been a while since you felt that again.
Right, right. And even when I do get beat up in jiu-jitsu, I'm still comfortable with it because I grew up getting beat up in jiu-jitsu, you know what I mean? So this was a whole new thing. And when I was coming back from my surgery, you know, I decided that I wanted to experience that. I needed to do that. I wanted to get out of my comfort zone. And, of course, I still wanted to do jiu-jitsu and grappling matches. But I decided, you know what, I'm going to stay away from the tournament, you know, all the tournaments, and just do what I'm most inspired for. And so the super fight scene has been really awesome, being able to jump in different pro events and get matches against guys that I'm definitely motivated for, and be on a big stage and sort of replicate the MMA vibe of, you know, being on a stage, just you have weigh-ins, sometimes there's the face-off and everything else, just like an MMA fight. And so I've kept myself in that rhythm.
It's almost like practice, huh?
It's practice.
Yeah.
Stay sharp, you know.
Wow.
Nowadays, I am having a lot of fun with MMA. I love the challenge. There's so many things I love about it. I love how it brings everything in my life together, you know. All my years of training, all my family, like my brothers, you know, and my father's in my corner. Shanji Hibeto's in my corner. My Muay Thai coach, who I've been training with, this is our 10-year anniversary of training, since the first time I trained with my Muay Thai coach, Mauricio Amado, who's head of Evolução Thai with his brother Dita. You know, this is our 10-year mark, and here I am fighting for the title now, you know. And so it just, you know, jiu-jitsu is obviously my number one passion. That's what I've committed the majority of my life to, and that's what I'll do forever until, you know, until they like I told you, until they bury me. But
those are my favorite lines in that whole interview. So I'll be competing until they put me in the ground. I love it.
That's it. But there's much more to my martial arts life than just jiu-jitsu. And when I'm fighting in the cage, everything comes together. And for me, that's like just an amazing feeling. And yeah, now here we are.
In general, MMA is accepted as being more difficult on the whole. But would you say being able to space your fights out, have longer camps, not be in a tournament grind, that might be a little bit easier to maintain peak levels in mixed martial arts than it would be in the jiu-jitsu circuit?
Well, in jiu-jitsu, you know, if you're competing all the time, you're going to get some losses. Mm. You know what I mean? Especially you fight the same people, you know, multiple times throughout your career, maybe even in the year. You know what I mean? They get your game figured out. They make adjustments. There's, you know, there's rules. There's points.
Sometimes there's one bad ref call, you know, the wrong
exactly.
way.
Exactly. There's a lot of variables. And that's definitely one thing I was feeling with jiu-jitsu that I was like, you know, I want the fight to be more in my own hands. You know what I mean? And in MMA, obviously there's points, you know what I mean? There's score cards and things like that. But when they lock the cage and that referee says fight, you know,
it's pretty much generally, in your hands at that
generally
point.
Speaking, if you lose, you feel like you lost, you know, for the most part. Mm. There's close decisions for sure, but it's not like jiu-jitsu, you know what I mean, where there's so many variables going in. So for me, actually, the way I feel is, obviously camps are more enjoyable nowadays, but generally I would say the difference between MMA and jiu-jitsu for me personally is the MMA camp day-to-day is way more intense. A lot more stress. It's hard on your body. Jiu-jitsu is hard on your body as well, but the impact, you know, getting hit, cuts, you know, different things like that. You know, you really have to make sure you're getting your recovery. You know what I mean? The day of a fight, even the couple days, you know, right before, I'm really like, okay, that's it. Like,
really?
I've done everything possible, and you really, it's instincts, it's your training. Like, you know, you're gonna perform, you're gonna do what you're trained to do, and I'm backstage before I walk out, I'm very calm.
Wow.
I'm very calm.
You are 9 fights in now as well, so you have a little bit more experience of that
even
too,
in
right?
The beginning though, even in the beginning, you know, in the beginning, the 2 months before, I was kind of a bit of a wreck, but even on the day of, I was still calm.
Wow.
Now, the 2 months before, I'm not a wreck. I have fun.
But
there's still plenty of tough days where you're just like, oh, man.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's interesting what you mentioned there about
that. In jiu-jitsu, let me finish the thought. In jiu-jitsu, it was the opposite. I'd have more fun. And training camp for, you know, really 4 to 6 weeks, you know. Like, for the Worlds is kind of when you maybe have the longest camp, but since you're always on the mats, like, you really only had to turn it up maybe 2 to 4 weeks generally. And then for Worlds or a major Brasileiro Pan Ams, maybe it's 4 to 6. Mm. So it's a shorter camp. You're way more happy throughout camp. But the day of jiu-jitsu events, I'm actually more of a nervous wreck.
Wow.
Because I'm thinking about, okay, I got to fight this guy, then that, possibly this guy. He's going to play this game, that game, da-da-da-da. You know, the points, you know, advantages. Are we going to get stalled out? You know, what's going to happen? How's the call is going to be? Who, you know, da-da-da-da-da-da. Fight on 2 days. There's the first day. There's the next day. You know, and it's a bit more rough, I feel. But MMA fight, one fight, one night. Let it all go. Trust your instincts. That's it.
So it sounds to me like there's a phenomenon in sports psychology known as arousal, and then specifically the flow state as well. So it sounds like in the jiu-jitsu tournaments, it's not conducive. The experience is not conducive to being in that, what they call a peak state of arousal, being in that calm yet focused, attentive state for peak performance, where you go out and you enter the what they call the flow state, which is where you turn off that, you know, they go to what they call the reptilian brain, right? Where simply the instinct takes over, you know, the movements flow. Mm-hmm. You don't have to necessarily think so much about what you're doing. It sounds like the MMA experience is a more conducive to that than the jiu-jitsu arena.
100%. Like I said, it's up and down. You have round one, round two, you got to come up, back down, you know, you know, it might be 20 minutes from match one to match two. Then it might be over an hour before you get match three. You know what I mean? Depending on how the brackets go, you sit there, you're warmed up too much, too soon.
People want to come talk to you, mess with you. Yeah.
You know what I mean? 100%. So, you know, that's why I prefer the super fights nowadays. You know, I've still jumped in the Masters a couple times.
Mm-hmm.
That was more because I had a lot of students there in the Masters. The vibe at the Masters is just amazing.
Well, you and your dad competed at the same tournament right?
Awesome. So we did it together. Yeah. You know, the year before, Shanji and I competed together, and it's more fun, you know, and you get to do all in one day. I'd rather do 7-8 matches in one day than 4 and 4. 100%. I'd rather go all day than split it up, have to go to bed and wake up and go again, you know.
I know we've enjoyed watching you a lot in the various grappling super fights you've been doing. You've been super active in Fight to Win. You've got a really good relationship with those guys, and man, you've had some fantastic matches there against various big names and very active names from the world of grappling. I'm just off the top of my head, you fought guys like Roberto Cyborg, Yuri Moyes, Josh Hinger. It's interesting as well, because you still got not much of a problem in bouncing from gi to no gi too, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm still doing jiu-jitsu all the time, you know. I'm in the gi multiple times a week, you know, teaching my boys, getting them ready for their competitions. We have competition training, and obviously that's not my focus, but I'm still watching all the events. I go coach when I can, seeing what's going on. I actually still feel like I'm getting much better, you know, and maybe it's because it is more fun right now, and then I don't have that stress or that pressure on it. Obviously going to no gi is a little easier, because that's what I do the most of. In fact, last year was the first year in my life since I did my very first jiu-jitsu tournament at like 12, 13 years old. Last year was the first year of my life that I didn't have a gi match.
That's crazy.
In a year.
Is that going to change this year?
With it being an ACC year, I don't think so. You know, I love it. I love jiu-jitsu. I love staying active. I want to keep my jiu-jitsu sharp. And, you know, it's different. You know what I mean? Like I said, it's not my focus. I can tell, you know, like, for example, in no-gi grappling, I'm not as slick with my transitions anymore, you know.
You can't afford to be an MMA, right?
Yeah, you can't miss an opportunity. You know what I mean? You have to control the person, keep them down, you know, and pick your spot very wisely. You can't, if you miss and you end up on bottom, that can change the whole fight, you know. So, and I get to use punches. I get to use elbows to set up myself.
I was going
to
ask, how much striking has become ingrained in your no-gi grappling, like on the ground? Do you use that, incorporate that much more?
I definitely can tell, like, you know, I think most people know me, you know, as loving the top game, pressure passing. I love to mount, you know. Now it's great because that transitions so great to MMA, and I get to mount. I just sit up and let it go, and then, the submissions come, right? Because you're going to get a reaction, you know what I mean? And if it's gi, I get to put my hand in the collar, you know, and that's great. Fistful of collar, right? No gi, you get to mount. You know, before I could kind of maybe set up some slick stuff, and you know, if there's a scramble, you know, you invite the scrambles, because in no-gi you kind of need a scramble to catch somebody, right? Well, now I'm all about like pinning the person. I try not to let there be a scramble, because a scramble, they use the cage, you got gloves on, they can get back up, and you have to start the fight.
It's much
over
more
again.
Conservative, right?
Yes, much more conservative. And now I've explored my game and being able to just pin somebody, you know, keep them flat, and then raise up and let it go, and then the submission will come.
Because that's
and
a criticism.
So if I can't hit them, and I'm mounted, you know, I don't have all the setups, because I just want to sit up and hit them.
It's a criticism we've seen sometimes of MMA fighters, is that, oh, their grappling sucks, their grappling is like just looks like a blue belt or whatever. But it's not necessarily the skill of the person, is it? It's what you can do in that situation. I think a lot of jiu-jitsu guys, they will be quick to criticize MMA fighters for their perceived lack of grappling ability, but it's not necessarily the case, is it?
Not at all. Not at all. And I'll tell you, I feel that my experience in MMA has made me a better jiu-jitsu practitioner, a better jiu-jitsu artist. I understand a different element, you know what I mean, that I wouldn't know or have experience without it. Like I said, now I have this better control on top. And I am, you know, you work hard to be more precise, because you don't get second chances, you know. You can't rely on that. You can't miss that mount, end up on bottom, and say, oh, well, I have 6 or 7 points. I'll win on points. No.
Now you're getting punched in the face.
Exactly. And so, you know, you have to be more precise. You understand how the strikes change everything. And then you have people that don't want to play guard. You know, you get on top in jiu-jitsu, everyone's pretty, you know, accepting of, okay, I play guard. Well, now you're dealing with people that are experts at getting back to their feet, you know, and there is no guard. You can't leave any space because they'll get up, you know, and so you have to stay connected, stay attached. So my pressure has gotten even better, you know, and all these things that I wouldn't have developed otherwise. So, you know, for me, I always stress, like, do everything, everything. Gi, no gi, you know, points, no points, you know, ADCC, experience all the different rules and formats. And hey, when you can, even if you're pure jiu-jitsu or whatever, like, you don't even like to compete, you know, put some little gloves on with control and just
tap.
Just see what it's like. See how you feel.
It changes things a lot, right?
It changes things a lot. It changes it a lot. And that's where jiu-jitsu came from. You know, that's the roots. And you know, you should, you know, understand how your game applies in those scenarios.
Very, very interesting. About the MMA thing as well is that we had Wagner Hocha in here a couple of months ago.
That's right.
And Wagner, obviously, a very experienced MMA fighter and grappler also, you know, went to the UFC.
I'm a big fan of his.
Multiple time ADCC veteran, much like yourself. So he was talking about how his passing system that he uses in no-gi, he calls it his float passing system. It's very reminiscent of your pressure passing system and especially the headquarters position. And he actually told us after he demonstrated us and we felt the miserable pressure that he generates, he told us he pretty much created it for MMA because it was, you know, a really advantageous position to strike from. So how much of your jiu-jitsu have you found has been very useful in your MMA?
Super useful. You know, and that's from a couple different sources. You know, first, you know, my father is my first teacher, my first martial arts teacher. You know, obviously he got me started when I was, as soon as I can move, basically, as soon as I was walking. I mean, there's pictures of me 3-4 years old, him holding mitts and things like that. Even videos of us training together when I'm super, you know, super small. And, you know, my father, he comes from, you know, a whole another era, right, of martial arts. You train martial arts for self-defense, you know, for real life practicality. And he's from the JKD influence. You know, Bruce Lee was his hero. Bruce is also one of my heroes.
Bruce Lee, first ever mixed martial artist, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so, growing up under that, you know, when we first started learning jiu-jitsu, we were learning jiu-jitsu as like, look, this is an element of self-defense that we have to have. It was about real life practicing, you know, or practicality, you know. You know, it, when in the beginning when we were training jiu-jitsu, I didn't even know there was a world championships. You know what I mean? There was no thought of winning medals or winning tournaments. And it was like, okay, look, you know, 90% of all fights end up in a clinch. You know what I mean? This is the best place to take a fight on the ground. You have complete control. I mean, it was all those things like that you learn from the very, you know, the Gracie in action videos back in the day, right? And so that was my roots in jiu-jitsu was for fighting. And you know, the first rounds of jiu-jitsu that we did was always no time limit, go to the sub, you know what I mean? And it was like, you know, it was all about, you know, real life practicality. And then, so that was my roots of jiu-jitsu. Fast forward to when I'm training with Sensei Solo and Shanji, you know, and then getting that style of jiu-jitsu, which comes from the old school, and is all about achieving the mount, you know, for the most part, you know, and like the fundamentals, the close guard, mount, you know, escapes, pressure, you know, those things that for me, I feel like give you a timeless jiu-jitsu, you know. When your foundation, your fundamentals are so strong, you can really like just go through generations and still be right there. I mean, you know, Shanji is an amazing example.
It's a perfect example
of this. Yeah. Last ADCC, he's getting 3 or 4 closed guard arm bars in no
incredible
yeah. in no gi at the highest level. No,
I mean,
gi.
Who even does that anymore? Right?
Exactly, exactly. And you know, he's you know, in his late 30s and still having that kind of performance. And when you see if he does lose, it's advantages, it's 2 points. Like, he's not getting dismantled by anybody, you know? And it's just because his foundation is so strong. There's not a lot of mistakes, you know? And so I believe that that style transitions so well to MMA because it's not really relying on grips or, you know, a sporty style game, you know what I mean? Not to say that sport jiu-jitsu isn't good jiu-jitsu, but there's definitely some things, obviously, you're not going to do in a fight. You know what I mean? It's a simpler, like you said, a simpler world, you know, and it usually comes down to those fundamentals. And the mount is, you know, where you want to be. For me, that's where I feel like, you know, that the fight's going to be over. And I, you know, getting that along with the roots for my father and everything else, that's what I'm saying, it puts everything together for me into me feeling like I'm doing what, you know, I was meant to do.
We've you know, we've been following jiu-jitsu, you know, competitors and various names from the world of grappling making their transition into MMA the last couple of years. Some who are very much established, you know, we're talking like the Damien Maia, the, you know, Jacare kind of figures. And recently there's been a kind of a wave of grapplers also moving into MMA. And now we've always, you know, looked towards you as a perfect example of that. You know, 9 fights, 6 wins by submission, you know, one of the best representatives of jiu-jitsu in the cage that we have currently. But there's a lot of, you know, sort of a second wave of these guys coming through, a younger generation. Let's throw a couple of names out there, and I'd just love to hear your opinion on how these guys are doing and what your thoughts are to see them in action. A lot of guys you'll be familiar with. One big name that people are talking about a lot, Dylan Danis, had his first fight, got his second coming up soon, also a Bellator fighter. What do you think about Dylan?
I mean, he's had his first fight, you know. There's still a lot more, you know, to see and how he grows, you know, how he deals with getting hit, and you know, he's pulling guard in his first fight, which, you know, will be much harder to do as things move along. I mean, he, you know, he may not have all the accolades as a black belt that some other jiu-jitsu guys, you know, that have transitioned to MMA successfully have had, like the Damien Maia and Jacare's. But Dylan definitely has good jiu-jitsu, and you know, I think he'll do well as long as he grows, you know, and he's taking the right fights. I think he is. So let's see. You know what I mean?
Seems like you're reserving judgment on that one.
Yeah, you know,
it's hard, right?
Well, he's only had one. It's one fight.
Yeah, it's one yeah. fight. It's one yeah. fight. I mean, he likes to say he's the best grappler in MMA. You know, we have to keep seeing. Right?
Are you interested to see how that goes, though? Is it something that you'll be keeping an eye on? Because, you know, he's managed to generate a lot of press, right? So,
yeah, he definitely has. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you know, I love to watch. You know, I do. And he's in the same organization. And so, you know, especially a jiu-jitsu guy, like, I wanted them all to have success, for sure. And, you know, it'd be awesome to see him do well.
Cool.
You know.
Let's throw some more names at you. Gary Tonon. How do you think about Gary?
Oh, he's doing awesome. He's on fire.
Yeah. Yeah?
He's doing, yeah, really great. You can see, you know, he's very relaxed. He's putting his striking together well. And he was a pretty good wrestler coming up as well. So I believe, you know, he has the wrestling, the jiu-jitsu, his striking is coming together. He's putting things together very well. He's not like, you know, I got to get this to the ground right away. He's shown a lot of composure. He comes from a great camp. You know,
he even seems to avoid going to the ground on purpose sometimes. Like, keep it standing to work on his skills a little
yeah,
bit.
Yeah, yeah. I think he's, like, he's going to be right up there.
One thing
sure.
I think is very evident about Gary and John Danaher, his coach, is very, very open about this fact, is that they use each fight as an opportunity to develop something new with mm-hmm. Gary, right? And we see him, it's almost coming in with a totally different style and game plan in every fight he's had so far, right?
Mm-hmm.
You think that's quite a smart thing to do in your career, right?
You know, like, if you have the right matchup, you know, I mean, of course, everyone's different too. Like, you know, when you have maybe a dangerous striker in front of you, you need to get them, someone that has a lot of knockout power, you need to get them down faster. Maybe they don't have a lot of knockouts, so you feel a little more comfortable, just keep it on the feet a little longer. Those sort of things. Yeah, it's good to get that experience, the ring time. You know, the first time I had a fight that went the distance, that's happened one time, you know, and that one fight really helped me grow a lot. And so definitely, you know, getting that cage time helps tremendously, and just getting more relaxed in there. And that's what I was saying. Like, I see that with him. He's, you know, very calm. And, you know, I think he's going to do very well.
Got another name for you. Cron Gracie.
Man, he looked amazing his first fight in the UFC. It was a bit of a break between his previous fights. You know, he's in a great camp too. Obviously, his jiu-jitsu is, you know, about as high a level as it can get. You know, I think in the UFC, the wrestling will definitely get to a point where, you know, you might run into a guy that was a stud college wrestler, you know, something like that. So, you know, we'll see how things go when that happens. But I know his hands are good. Like I said, he's in a great camp.
Do you think that's the case? Because I mean, we haven't really seen it, right? We haven't seen his hands. He's come out and he's looked like the quintessential, the classic Gracie jiu-jitsu practitioner. He comes out, he has the low stance, he does the little front stomp kick, you know, mm-hmm. and then boom, gets it to ground and finishes it every time.
He showed his hands a little bit in his fights in Japan. You know, he had some clinch, some dirty boxing, like the Diaz style, you know. He's not scared to box. He's a southpaw, so that's good. I think you might be surprised with his hands. Like, he's comfortable.
But you're worried about the wrestling.
I'm not worried. I know he's going to do great. I just, you know, I think in the UFC, there's a lot of great wrestlers.
Right.
You know what I mean? And so that's
a concern.
That's some, you know, for every jiu-jitsu guy, right, I'd say the times when, you know, you get tested the most is whenever you're with a really great wrestler who has good hands. So they stuff the shots, they keep it on the feet, they throw the hands, especially they have knockout power. That's when things can get dangerous, and that's kind of like a trademark in the UFC. So, you know, I think he's going to take the right road, and when it comes to that time, you know what I mean? We'll see. That's definitely like the time that I had the decision, and I had all that, you know, cage time come together. I was fighting against a two-time All-American, you know, and so that's where, you know, you're going to have to fight on the feet longer. You can't expect to get an easy takedown, so things change.
And one more name, I'm sorry, but she's taking a little bit of a break, you know, family time and stuff like that. But somebody who made a lot of noise in a very short space of time in her MMA career was Mackenzie Dern. How did mm-hmm. What did you think about watching Mackenzie?
I think it's awesome. Super exciting. She's not scared to mix it up either. You know what I mean? She throws hands. Yeah, scrappling. you know, and I mean, her jiu-jitsu is second to none. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see how she balances everything coming back. But she's young, and I'm sure she's going to be super successful.
100%. I mean, we've heard as well that she could potentially be coming back for ADCC later this year. I mean, that seems
ambitious.
Seems like a bold goal. Yeah, but I mean, that would be incredible.
That would be awesome.
So,
yeah.
See how that goes.
You mentioned a lot styles make matches and good fights. How granular do you get preparing for a fight? Like, what are you watching in their game? Do you pay attention to how much does that factor into your game plan going into a match or a fight?
You know, you definitely got to do your homework, obviously. With MMA, I like to leave that in the hands of my coaches a lot more. In jiu-jitsu, you know, I study my opponents for sure, but there was definitely some moments where I felt like I overstudied, you know what I mean? And you know, and that's the last thing I want to happen in an MMA fight. So
you're not the kind of guy who, you know, he has a picture of his opponent on the bathroom mirror or the refrigerator, sort of looking at him every day or so.
You know, when I was younger, I definitely had some of those tendencies. I'm not like that anymore. And I mean, with my next opponent, Musasi, I mean, I've been watching him for years, so I definitely know what I'm getting into.
It's no secret, right?
With him, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
Some of my other opponents, you know, I definitely watch a few of their fights, but I wasn't consumed by it. I maybe do one round of like one night of studying with my coach, and then I let my coaches take care of it from there, and they might watch them much more than me, and they come and they have the game plan, you know. You know, you have to be careful that you don't think about all the things that they're good at and you forget what you're good at and performing your abilities.
It's smart, right? Because ultimately you have to focus on things that you can control. And, mm-hmm. you know, there's no point
exactly.
expending that energy thinking about something outside of your sphere of control. So, Raphael, this has been absolutely fantastic. Thank you so much for coming in today. Let's just run through a few things quickly. We can expect to see you June 22nd, Bellator 223 in London, England, against Gegard Mousasi for the 185-pound title. I'm sure we'll be super excited to see that go. So best of luck with that.
Thank you.
I mean, obviously, you know, you're coming back for ADCC later this year. That's something that has been confirmed. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a bit of break. You'll have July, August, September. You'll have approximately 3 months.
Perfect time.
Yeah.
You know, we were scheduled to fight at the end of January, Mousasi and I. And, you know, he got injured and he had to pull out. I was already halfway through camp. And that was kind of a tough moment to just, you know, figure out, okay, where we're going to go, what are we going to do? And I was constantly waiting for news, like how long does he need? When are we going to reschedule? It was a bit of a navigation, you know. I ended up doing some grappling matches in the meantime once I figured out that it was going to be a little while. They came to me with this date and this card, this event, which is going to be huge. In Europe, you know, Bellator is doing big things in Europe. They have the deal with Sky Sports, which is like the ESPN of Europe, and Viacom, you know, has a lot of local channels in the European countries. So people that don't even have, you know, cable, don't even have Sky Sports, many times can still access Bellator. So they have a big presence there. And this is a major, major card, arguably maybe the biggest UK MMA card that there's been.
It's your first international MMA fight as well, right?
It is.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
And I'm very excited about it. You know, obviously, LA would have been amazing. That's where all my jiu-jitsu history is, and the jiu-jitsu community is so prevalent there. But Europe also has a very special place in my heart. I've been competing and teaching there for a decade plus. And so I'm really happy to have my first international fight there. And I think I'm going to have a lot of the jiu-jitsu community in Europe there cheering for me. And now we're the main event, this big car, perfect timing, summer. I don't have to, you know, I was in camp during the holidays and things like that. And so
you get a nice vacation.
I have a great amount of time. We still have 9 weeks from Saturday and a good little vacation afterwards, like you said. And then August, I can pick things back up, get ready for ADCC, go coach my guys at Masters and, you know, and hopefully finish the year with defending the belt one more time, one more fight.
Fantastic. That'd be a good year. Yeah, well, yeah, well, we are super excited for all of that. It's on the horizon. It's coming up. Just a reminder that if people would like to know more about your backstory, of course, we've got that fantastic documentary on Flow Grappling, The American, and I really recommend that people go check that out because it's it fills in a lot of the gaps about what we were talking about
today. Some cool old footage and stuff like that.
Amazing, yeah. I love the old school stuff of you and your family training. I think that's really cool. And then, you know, for people to be able to see the relationship you have with your father as well, the influence that he's had on you as a martial artist.
Yes.
You know, can't be understated. So,
yeah, I'm very
but,
lucky.
Once again, thanks so much for coming in. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you here with us. And guys, we will see you again very soon for another episode of Fistful of Colors.